Good evening, Pine Belt. Happy lunch hour to you, and welcome to another edition of Stage, Style, and Study. We're celebrating 53 years of circuit broadcasting in association with Mississippi's first minority-owned radio station. Stage, Style, and Study airs live on Fridays at noon on WJMG 92.1 FM. And you'll find us on Facebook at WJMG 92.1 FM, Southeast Mississippi. We have a special treat for you today. We have Dr. Tommy Tonea Stewart, who is a former professor at Jackson State University, has taught in Alabama, is a member of the National Education Association, but you will probably remember her for playing Aunt Kitty on In the Heat of the Night. And so, Dr. Stewart, welcome to WJMG. We're just tickled pink that you could join us today.
I'm excited about being with you today, and Dr. Michael Marsh, you have been a Trojan ever since I've met you. You're a wonderful person, and we're so proud of all of your accomplishments.
Well, listen, back at you, and as a matter of record, the two of us met in person. Of course, I am an In the Heat of the Night fan, but we met in person at the National Conference of the National Education Association in Washington, D.C., and you were there as a member.
You jumped on the piano.
Yes.
And accompanied me.
Yes. We were having the Black History Celebration in February for the National Board of Directors, as I remember, performance for 400 and something people, and you needed an accompanist, and you were just looking around, does anybody here play the piano? And I said, well, I do. And, of course, between the two of us, we knew we had to have the Negro National Anthem. So that was just wonderful. So that's how I first met you in person. And it's just been a pleasure every time our paths have crossed. Listen, tell us a little bit about how you got started in this wonderful career as an acclaimed actress.
Well, actually, I give Mississippi credit for all of me. I was born and raised in the Delta, Greenwood, Mississippi. And in Greenwood, we had a lot of wonderful activities that we could do within the Black community. I'll never forget the Catholic Church, St. Francis Church, had a skating rink. And at that skating rink, we had partners, we had competition. We also did performances. And in my elementary, middle school, and high school in Greenwood, we had plays, we had speaking engagements, and we competed across the state in music and in theater. Mrs. Leola G. Williams was my teacher at that time, and then when I graduated from high school in Greenwood, at Threadgill High School, I went on to Jackson State University and met Dr. E.J. Fisher. And Dr. Fisher had seen me in competition and encouraged me to stay in the theater. I went to Jackson State on a biology scholarship to become a medical doctor. And when I walked into Dr. George Washington's lab class and he was dissecting for us, I think it was a raccoon. It was a hairy something laying on that table, and I have a phobia about it. I backed out of the classroom and just cried in the hallway and ran over to Dansby Hall at Jackson State, and Dr. Fisher said, I've been waiting for you. And I'm telling you, that was the beginning of the turning point, because all of my life I was singing in the choir at church, singing in the choir at school. All of my life I was making speeches at church, at school, with the Elks Club, being in beauty pageants. I participated in the pageants for the scholarship because I felt like I was not a beauty. My best friend Sarah was a beauty. So we helped each other. And she became Miss America of Elkton, and I was a runner-up all the way to all of the competitions. And so at Jackson State, not only was I her runner-up in the competition, but she became my runner-up when I became Miss Jackson State.
Listen at that.
So it was amazing. And just life in the South in Mississippi was full of people believing in you, encouraging you, and pushing you. So then Dr. Fisher put some papers on the bulletin board that he'd gotten in the mail and said for all of his students to go to that bulletin board and apply to these programs. And I always watched the bulletin board, and I've always had a dream of one day going to California. And sure enough, on that board was a summer institute at UC Santa Barbara. I applied, and out of 400 applicants, they selected 20. I was one of the 20, and so was Mr. E.J. Fisher, one of the 20. And we ended up in Santa Barbara. And from there, I met Frank Silvera. Frank Silvera was a guest director. He just took me under his wings, drove me to L.A., introduced me to his first student, actress Bee Richards, and he wanted her to meet me. He wanted her to mentor me. And from there, I started doing all kinds of acting opportunities that Frank Silvera introduced me to. He took me to 20th Century Fox and introduced me to Jack Roberts, a leading casting director. And Jack Roberts thought that that was really interesting, because when I walked in that hallway and all of these beautiful girls were there for this show, they were doing auditions. I don't even remember the name of the show. But I had on a lemon yellow polyester dress, and I had pressed my hair and greased it down.
You were looking good.
When I walked into that hallway, those girls were laughing at me, hiding behind the pages of their headshots. And I didn't know what they were laughing about. They were laughing because I looked like Ludabelle Gussie Mae Jenkins. But listen, Jack Roberts really thought that I had a talent. Frank Silvera said I had a talent. As a matter of fact, he classified what I do as being. He said, "You just like Bea. You wouldn't know her when I first met her." I said, "Oh, I've heard of Bea Richards. She's from Vicksburg, Mississippi."
Uh-huh.
He said, "That's right." He said, "Where are you from?" I said, "Mississippi." He said, "What?" And that was it.
That was the connection you needed.
Yeah, it really was. The interesting thing, when I went into that audition and Frank Silvera was sitting there, Jack Roberts said, "Did you know what this role was about?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, your dress is a little long. Let me see your legs." And I was a nervous wreck. And then he said, "You know what? You are a rare catch, and I will never forget you." And he didn't. When I graduated from Santa Barbara, Frank Silvera was planning a big party, and for Henry Brown, who was graduating undergrad, and I was graduating with my master's, and Frank had been cast in a role in a movie, so he thought he would have this party and introduce Henry and I to all of these Hollywood people that would be there. Well, his wife called him into the kitchen and told him in their preparation that the garbage disposal was locked, and he went under the cabinet to dislodge it and was instantly electrocuted to
death. Oh, my goodness.
I was devastated. But I left California and came back to Jackson State to be an instructor of theater,
mm-hmm.
speech and theater. Had wonderful experiences at Jackson State. And my students and I were in every movie that came through the state. I became like a volunteer casting director. And I found myself auditioning as well for shows like Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, Beulah Land, and the list goes on and on. And at the same time, I was performing at New Stage Theater in productions.
Yes.
And ended up directing Home by Sam Art Williams at New Stage. And little did I realize at the time that I was the first African-American director at New Stage. I was the first actress in the African-American to star on their stage. And then I became a member of the board, and New Stage really was a great eye-opener for me. And I had a chance to rub shoulders at Jackson State with Margaret Walker Alexander, who was my professor.
Oh, my goodness.
And Eudora Welty at New Stage. So I was in the middle of richness.
You were in some good company there. Now, listen, I have
I'm
to tell you.
Very good company.
Yeah.
And then I decided to go to graduate school to do my doctoral degree because of the McKnight Foundation. They awarded me full scholarship to go for a doctorate, and then I became the first African-American female to receive a doctorate in theater from Florida State University or from any university in the state of Florida.
That is incredible.
And Mississippi. Yeah, we didn't have a PhD program anywhere in Mississippi in theater, and I don't know whether we have it yet, but they did have it in Florida. So by my graduating with a PhD in theater, it made me make a historical mark. But the thing that was most important that I should tell you, Mike, is that my work, my dissertation, I decided to write it on Frank Silvera because Frank Silvera started what's called the American Theater of Being, and D. Richards was his first student. But there were others who became great as well. Personalities like Louis Gossett Jr., Juanita Moore, Esther Rolle, Whitman Mayo, Grady from Sanford and Son. All of these legends.
Those were trailblazers.
Frank Silvera was an American theater being. And when my professors at first didn't want me to take that topic, but I kept talking about it, so they said, okay, go ahead, let's see what you're going to do. So to this day, I've taught that technique to my students, and I'm very proud to say that out of all the students I've had, at least 47 of them are now holders of a Master of Fine Arts degree in theater.
Yes.
And they've studied at the top universities. And of that 47, they all went on graduate scholarships.
What a legend. And what a legacy
and they're
you
doing
have.
Extremely well. My son, Thomas Stewart, and his wife, L.J. Stewart, they were my students as well. They both graduated from Alabama State. Even though all of the children in our family attended Jackson State, including my youngest son. But we graduated. I ended up bringing him to Alabama State to keep him focused. And he met this beautifully, beautifully talented L.J. Stewart. So they have put together a documentary for me on Frank Silvera, and they're helping me to get his name and B. Richard's name out there. And what's more important is we're pulling together a book so that when I leave this earth, there will be some guidelines to motivate and validate talented young people, regardless of race or profession, that they can too exhibit their talent, their art, and make use of their God-given talent. Frank Silvera taught us that we exist in a complete and perfect state. We lack no essential characteristics. A lot of young people don't understand that they are complete and perfect.
Yes.
They constantly try to change themselves and emulate others, but don't do that. Glorify in your God-given gift.
Yeah, use the gift you have. That's right.
That's right. So I'm telling you, I'm so happy to talk to you.
Oh,
I'm
listen,
going on and on.
I feel like we're catching up. We haven't seen each other in a while, but you have had so many honors bestowed upon you now. Not only were you the first African-American to receive that doctoral degree in theater from Florida State University, but you received the Champion of Change Award from President Barack Obama at the White House.
That's true.
You received Mississippi Governor's Lifetime Achievement Award, the Women's and Theater Festival of Memphis Award, Southern Christian Leadership Performing Arts Award. I mean, I could go on and on and on. You have left a legacy, and thank you for doing this book because it will provide a real guideline for people who want to follow in your steps because you obviously have a proven method, and I love that you're giving credit to those that are coming behind you, and I hope you'll let me be involved in that. I can't wait to read that book.
I I'm telling you, I want you involved, and you asked me some questions before that is making me stop and really regroup my focus with that book. So I'm going to continue to work on that and try to get it going, because I really want, I don't want Frank Silvera's work to die in vain. I don't want Bea Richards' name and her work to die in vain. And I want my children, her nephew, and Frank Silvera's children to benefit from him giving of himself as he did, and my giving of myself
yes.
as I did, and Bea giving of herself as she did. And the shoulders that we stand on, many names are not called anymore. People don't know about them, and I want our young people to remember and know. I was doing some research with Arnett Moore and my daughter-in-law on Juanita Moore, and she played the mother on Imitation of Life,
mm-hmm.
and we laid a star for her at the museum, at the Max Museum.
She was fantastic in that movie. It scared me to death, though.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, in talking to Arnett, her nephew, who is really a history buff, because we're working on getting a star on the Walk of Fame for Juanita Moore, and I hope that I'll be able to help get a star for Bea Richards and Frank Silvera. There used to be a Negro Screen Actors Guild.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
But there was a Negro Guild, because we could not be a part
that's
of
right.
the Screen Actors Guild.
That's right.
Juanita Moore was one of the original members, charter members, for starting that guild. Ira Aldridge was a person whose shoulders we stand on. And, of course, Paul Robeson helped us get that guild going. I am so proud of their legacy. Our young people don't know that.
Yes.
They're thinking about just getting an Oscar or something for themselves and making money for themselves. They need to know where the foundation was laid, who laid it.
That's right.
And
the history is important.
And what spurred them to lay it. They didn't do it for their self-aggrandizement. They did it for us, for
yeah.
the future.
And to advance the art, and you're absolutely right. All of us stand on the shoulders of giants, and the people that you have articulated, those names that you have been fortunate enough to be associated with, all of you guys built a legacy so that the rest of us could follow, and that tradition has to continue. And so that's why I say I think it's great that you're writing this book. Now listen, you have been on TV shows, you've visited with Ellen DeGeneres, you have talked with Jada Pickett, you've been in movies with Queen Latifah. We are just so proud of you.
You have some
fantastic relationships in Hollywood, but it is because you have earned them. You have worked, and you have worked diligently. And so we salute you today. Before our time runs out, is there anything, any advice that you would give this next generation?
My advice is to believe in yourself and understand that everything that we have today had its beginning with someone somewhere. And it's important for us to keep our legacies alive. It's important that we do all that we can to help each other. Don't look at each other and envy and be jealous. That gets us nowhere. That's a waste of time. Believe in yourself. Trust your ideas, because God put them there, and that idea will be something new for the rest of the world.
That's exactly right.
You are
right.
Here for a reason. Believe it.
And
trust
it. You have to believe it to achieve it.
That's right.
Well, listen, Dr. Stewart.
If you don't see it, if you don't see the history, you don't see the
that's
richness
right.
of your culture, then you won't believe it.
That's right.
We've got to see it and believe it. So that's my advice.
Well, Dr. Stewart, it is advice well given, and we're going to hope that the next generation of actors, of civic leaders, of community leaders will take your advice to heart. It sounds as if Mississippi Public Schools prepared you well for the future that you inherited. So we're just so proud of your work ethic and how beautifully you speak for all of us. So thank you again. You are certainly our hero. All right.
Thank you so much. It's so kind of you to say it. But you continue to do what you're doing, because I know you've worked in the public schools. I know about you being a superintendent. I know about you. See, you didn't know I knew all that, did you?
I didn't know all that.
I follow people who have a positive energy about them, because that positive energy touches everybody else.
Well, that's a great compliment.
You may never know the young people that will remember your guiding and kind words, but those words made a difference.
And I'm just thinking, if my aunt hadn't beat me on my knuckles and made me start studying piano when I was 5 years old, we would never have met.
So, See that? It
was destined. And so, Dr. Tommy Tanea Stewart, thank you for all you have done. You're a real champion for our state, and we celebrate your success. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and I hope young people will take these things to heart and know that everybody has to come from somewhere. So where you come from does not dictate where you will end up. I told Twitch that we work with Ellen DeGeneres, and he sees it now. I want our young people to see it too.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, amen to that. You've been listening to Dr. Tanea Stewart, a great champion of the theater and live performing arts in America, and we're just so proud of her. We will be back, where we're going to talk a little bit about the Hattiesburg Hall of Fame after these messages. Welcome back to part two of State Style and Study. Want to encourage everybody to get out. It is the weekend of the historic Mobile Street Renaissance Festival pageant and other activities, so including the pound cake contest, which I will be judging. So please, please, please patronize this great event for East Hattiesburg. It is also the weekend of the Hattiesburg Hall of Fame. This is an annual event that honors outstanding public school alumni from the city of Hattiesburg. It is sponsored by the Hattiesburg Public School District Foundation in partnership with the Hattiesburg Public Schools. And we're delighted that we have some interviews from the six inductees this year. They are Larry Albert, Mariska Brown, Anthony Harris, Billy Knight Sr., J. Ed Morgan, and Peggy Varnado. So you'll be listening to their interviews that played last night as they were inducted into the Hattiesburg Hall of Fame. Be blessed and have a good one. Those interviews are with us now.
Hi, I'm Billy Knight. I finished Royan High School in Hattiesburg in 1959. My success really is based on my loving family, you know, my mother and father and my sister and brothers. You know, there were 11 of us, and they was all very nurturing of me because I was the last one. And being the last one and really the only one to finish college out of 11, because back in the day, you know, my sister and brothers, they went into the military, the boys did, and the girls just, once they graduated from high school, they went to work. But they always determined that I would get a college education. So fortunately, I was able to play football and got a scholarship. But everything else, my sister and brothers stepped up. My family, my mother and father, and people around me that helped me get where I am. Quality education in the public school system in Hattiesburg was the very best in the whole state. And I wouldn't change that for anything, because coming out of public schools in Hattiesburg is what shaped who I am today. It gave me the quality education, the faculty, the staff that was at Royan High School was next to none, you know, because they gave us the nurturing that we needed to really shape our life. And being in the public schools in Hattiesburg is the best thing could have happened to me. Then the friendship that you develop with other classmates and other students in the school. I just cannot say enough about the teachers, because you know, they lived in our community. We went to church with them. We saw them in the grocery stores. You know, obviously they knew our parents. And it was an environment there that we knew that if we didn't do it right, our parents would know about it. But more importantly, those teachers wanted all of us to be successful. Yeah, you know, I'm very fortunate to have been able to win this election of Mayor Moss Point, and I've been in this position now 1 year, starting July 2021. And in this job, it allows me to really set the agenda and, of course, the vision that I have for Moss Point. But I'm also now involved with the Jackson County Economic Development Foundation, where we look at the whole county for economic development opportunities. And working closely with the Economic Development Foundation helps me to really make them aware of what Moss Point needs. Part of Moss Point is the Trent Lott Airport. And because I'm the mayor of Moss Point, I sit on the strategic development plan, planning committee, where we're looking at Trent Lott Airport as to how we're going to expand that for future growth in the next 10 years. And it provides Moss Point with a lot of opportunities. So I'm very fortunate to be able to be on that strategic planning committee in order to help set the future of the airport and also Moss Point. In the local community, I'm part of the Moss Point Rotary Club. And the Moss Point Rotary Club does a lot of things in the community. Most of you know that's in this building know about the Rotary Club and kind of activities does worldwide. And so I'm happy to be a part of the Moss Point Rotary Club.
My name is Peggy Ann Brockman Varnado, and I graduated from Hattiesburg High School in the class of 1969. And with the question being, what is the secret to my success, I first have to give the disclaimer that I have not been successful in everything that I would like to be, but neither have I given up. I still have a little time, I hope, to do some, meet some of my other goals. But in my success at teaching, because I do feel like I've been a successful teacher, begins with the fact that I knew I wanted to be a teacher from practically the day I was born. My grandmother told me stories of teaching in a one-room schoolhouse, grades 1 through 8, in the late 1880s. And I think maybe she romanticized it somewhat, but it made me fall in love with the profession. And I've never wavered from it. I never wanted to be anything else but a teacher, and that was my overriding goal. So I went to college and majored in elementary education and psychology, zipped through that in 3 years because I had a sibling coming behind me, but more than that, I wanted to get in that classroom. So I finished and got a job in Northport, Alabama, which at that time was a little country town. Now it's a ritzy suburb. But my kids came and plopped cabbages on my desk when they were harvested and said, "Teacher gets the first fruits of the garden." That was a very old tradition when teachers were paid with the fruits of the garden. And it was evenly divided racially, 50-50, and that was a wonderful mix of children. There was not a minority or majority in that class. And it was almost like a movie could have been made of that year. It was so perfect. One of my students that year, a precious little boy who looked like a miniature Michael Jackson, was named Cedric Williams, and he is maybe watching this right now. We reconnected. It's been 50 years since we were in the classrooms together, but we reconnected. He's in Chicago, and my son, his family are in Chicago, and we get together very frequently, and that is really, to me, almost miraculous that my original first grade student is still in my life, very important to me. I was so fortunate to fall in love with my classroom and have an ideal first year. Second year, I went to New Orleans. I was assigned, as all first year teachers were, to the most desperate and dangerous schools in the city. The police did not come into the neighborhood where I taught in New Orleans. The facilities were horrible. The faculty banded together and got the school torn down in a couple of years. The faculty actually did that on their own because it was so embarrassing to the city when we took the pictures that they tore it and replaced it with a beautiful building. So many teachers quit that year in that school, especially the first year teachers. That's when my devotion to my profession was most tested. But I couldn't. I wanted to quit many days. I was afraid. But I love those children more than I like the idea of quitting. And so if you have times like that in your career, you know, ride them out as best you can, because it gave me an appreciation for what little children had to go through in that school, and the lack of funding and the lack of materials and the danger that they lived with every day. And that changed my whole life. I'll never forget what I learned there, and that came in very handy on every other class I ever taught, to have a better understanding of your debt and your tuition. So it's good grades, good recommendations that help you do that. So the Hattiesburg Public Schools were a wonderful jumping off point for me and also my children. All three of my kids did very well in the public schools and were able to go. They were accepted to every school to which they applied, and that included Harvard and Yale and MIT and Georgia Tech. And the two of my students, my children went to Duke University, and my youngest went to Wesleyan University. They because they have one of the premier film studies programs in the country. They had no trouble getting in. In fact, schools competed for them. Schools wanted them because their education in the Hattiesburg Public Schools had prepared them to make good test scores, to interview beautifully, according to Mr. Marks, with the help of Mr. Marks and Mr. Waldrop, and to know something about the world and something about life and how to get along with all kinds of people. Those were skills that took my children very far. And a couple of them are teachers now, attorneys, artists working in film. And so you can do anything with an education from the Hattiesburg Public Schools. I hope you'll remember that.
My name is Larry Albert. I graduated in 1972. The secret to my success is the talent that I got from God Almighty, and using that talent and getting trained well and educated well enabled me to produce good buildings, and those good buildings spoke for themselves, one client to the next. The best thing I learned by being in a public school is the variety of different kind of people that you're going to encounter in life. Everybody wasn't just the same. Everybody didn't do the same thing. They're all different. Some people you got along well with, some you didn't really get along well, but at least you learned there was a variety of thinkers and people with different cultures, and you wouldn't have had that if you'd just been in one kind of narrow-visioned culture of education. So public school, in my mind, is the best way to get a good start in life on understanding people in general. I got great training from some great teachers in the Hattiesburg High School, also in the junior high school and in my elementary school. I actually even remember all my teachers and the ones that had great impact on me, like Ms. Martin, my Math 4 and Math 5 classes in high school. My art teacher in high school, Ms. Snail, had a big impact on me. Mr. Stewart, who I did a drafting class under, who was the person that said that he hadn't seen anybody with that much talent to draw, and that I was definitely 100% an architect. It had an impact on me, and especially at that point that Mr. Stewart's class that's supposed to take a whole year, I finished it up by October. And so then, ironically, in the world today, this would never happen. but they didn't know what to do with me. So they let me teach Art 1 in Miss Snell's class. So I actually taught from October to the end of the year art to all the other students. I took Art 1 and the teacher said, "What are you doing in here? You're advanced in art. You're probably more advanced than I am, and I'm the teacher." So then when I took the drafting class, and their classes backed up to each other, so he told her I had finished the work. She wasn't surprised and said, "Well, just let him come over here and teach." And she sat there and graded drawings and stuff while I taught the class at the chalkboard, showing them how to draw two-point perspectives and one-point perspectives. And guess what I drew? Buildings. Just naturally drew buildings to show them how you draw. I think I tried to teach them how to draw a portrait, but I wasn't quite as good at that as I was drawing buildings. I've gotten opportunities to design buildings like the Hasbro Public Library, the Hasbro Convention Center, the Thad Cochran Center, the Trent Lott Center, but a lot of the most significant high-profile public buildings in Hattiesburg, I've been able to be the architect on, including over in Brookhaven, the Mississippi School of the Arts, up in Richland, Mississippi Craft Center. Working with all the craftsmen in Mississippi was such a treat. I've enjoyed having good clients, and my goal has always been that those good clients would become some of my best friends. And I've been blessed in that to occur also. In most, 99% of the cases, I end up with a dear friend after I work with them on a building. Right now, I'm the principal in Albert and Robinson Architects. I'm the principal in Albert and Associates Architects. I'm the principal in Albert and McCleskey Architects. I'm a member of the Kiwanis Club, member of the ADP. I am a permanent board member. Got that honor for the Downtown Association. I'm also on the board at Mississippi State University School of Architecture, and I've been on that board for about 15 years, and I've enjoyed being there and trying to recruit Mississippians into our school. Our school rates basically top 25 in the country, and right now we're getting more out-of-state students than we are in-state. But we still have good in-state students, and we got a lot of talent in this state. And so that's kind of my goal, is to try to get those people aimed at our school and our state if I can. So then we can keep some architects in Mississippi.
My name is Ed Morgan. I'm a Hattiesburg High School graduate, 1965. You know, the secret, I don't know that it's a secret for success. I think it's primarily a number of principles and basic things like, one, I think education extremely important. It's not totally necessary depending on what field of work you go into, but a basic education, and then that the people that really succeed end up having a passion for their work, and they're usually good planners. I found that whether you're a student, a young person, or whether you're an employee, or whether you're a company owner, or a mayor, or a governor, those people that succeed, generally speaking, have a plan, and sometimes it's actually a written plan that has deadlines in it. And it's usually done in conjunction with other like-minded people. But if you don't have a plan, you kind of wander around through life and really don't get to a specific area which is successful. I probably had a normal, not career, but experience in growing up. Hattiesburg is undervalued by a lot of people. People don't realize the quality of life, the livability that we have, the safety net that that is there. we had more freedom when I was growing up. There was more safety. You kids could do more, didn't have to be as cautious as you do today in today's environment. But I had a normal upbringing, one that positioned you for success in the future. When I look back, and I mentioned education, one of the things, public education when I was there was excellent. We had good teachers, we had good programs, extracurricular activities, and those items are necessary as your building blocks for the future of individuals. So I'm grateful for the teachers that I had and the quality of the school system, and really put me in a position to succeed at the next step and be prepared for college and other career type things that come your way because of the quality of education I was fortunate enough to have in Hattiesburg. Well, I'm retired now, so the things that I do have changed pretty drastically. I'm as busy as I ever was, and there are a few things that just have to do with bucket lists that I do. I get it. My wife and I travel a lot. We do that. I have a passion for the outdoors. I love hunting and fishing. I play golf every now and then. My wife still works, so she has a to-do list for me to work. Keeps me busy in the yard and doing other things. But extracurricular, I'm involved with the Muscular Dystrophy Association, with the Alzheimer's Association, and work with various groups like that. But also involved with, when you get to have grandchildren, which I do, spend a lot of time with the grandchildren and kids and that thing, and enjoying them and watching them grow up. But stay busy doing those type things, and that's what my passion probably is family, recreation, and having a good time in retirement.
Hi, my name is Dr. Mariska Brown, and I graduated from Hattiesburg High School in 1999. I don't necessarily think that there is a secret to anyone's success. I think having strong family support and making good friends helps with a lot in life and covers a lot of things and challenges that we go through. Being able to have that support system to help push you forward and to provide guidance or a sounding board. And so if there's any secret, it's having that strong support. Coming from a public school, how it impacted my success, I think I got a great education at Hattiesburg High School. I will say that the curricula and the strong teachers and all of the things that we had available at Hattiesburg High when I attended, it really did help with me essentially moving forward. The primary extracurricular activity I was involved in was band. And, you know, I made friends from the time I was in early junior high and kept those same friends and that same support system throughout the entirety of my high school career. And so those strong relationships, and, you know, there were some very, very good teachers at Hattiesburg High School. I my fondest memory as far as interacting with the teacher was Martha Bufkin. She was my biology teacher my sophomore year in high school, and then she was my anatomy and physiology teacher in high school, and I was actually an assistant in one of her labs, and she was fantastic. I have a very clear memory of there was a health fair at Hattiesburg High, and one of the things that they had was poster mat, and it was huge, and it had the human heart. It was a depiction, a schematic of the human heart. And the challenge was to essentially walk through like you were blood and how blood moves through the heart, right? And she's on the side, like I'm walking and she's cheering me on, cheering and scolding at the same time when I'm about to make a misstep. And she's like, I taught you this. You know this, Mariska, you can do this. And I did it and won like and I won like this stuffy, you know, this bear with a heart that was holding, you know, essentially the shape of a heart. And I still have that thing. And I just remember her being on the sidelines, just cheering me on. Again, back to, you know, the strong teachers, the support, the friends, the relationships. It was I have very, very fond memories, and I know that I received a quality education from Hattiesburg Public Schools. Some things that I'm doing currently, so my position is as a director of the National Center on Sleep Disorders Research at the National Institutes of Health, and NIH is National Institutes of Health. It's an S on there because there are 27 institute centers and offices that comprise the one NIH. I actually work in the Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute is where my center is located. And essentially, I am responsible for sleep and circadian research, not only across NIH, but across the federal government. So my stakeholders include many, many different persons and societies and entities. So with our center, we support grant applications, we support science, we also, again, coordinate sleep and circadian research across the federal government. And we do a lot of outreach, educating not only the all of our stakeholders, which are the academic communities, industries, as well as professional societies and medical professionals.
My name is Anthony Harris, and I graduated from L.J. Rowan High School in the year 1971, which happened to have been the last year Rowan was a high school. Coming from the public schools of Hattiesburg impacted my success in so many different ways. Number one, the education that I received in the Hattiesburg Public Schools was foundational. It formed the basis of everything that I learned to do afterwards. The teachers that we had, they instilled in us that desire to learn, that desire to achieve. They instilled these values of determination, self-confidence. Those things that stuck with me throughout my years leaving elementary school, going into middle school, high school, and into college. So I would say the teachers were that's who I would give credit to. Any successes that I have, because first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, all the way through the public school system, I had wonderful teachers. I had teachers who expected a lot from us. They challenged us. They knew that in order for us to be successful, we had to not to be as good as our counterparts, but we had to sometimes strive to be two or three times more successful and more determined. So coming from the public school impacted my success in a number of ways. Perhaps the most important way was that my teachers from first grade all the way through 12th grade held high expectations for not just for myself, but for all the students in the schools, particularly those students in the elementary grades, because that was a time when there was racial segregation in the Hattiesburg public school system. And we knew that the textbooks, we eventually learned that the textbooks that we were using for our classes were outdated textbooks that had been handed down from the other schools. But our teachers taught from the heart, not just from the textbook. And they made sure that we understood the value of a good education. They knew they made sure we understood the value of something that Du Bois talked about, and that as we move up the ladder of success, that we should always bring somebody with us. So that's another lesson in life that I think has led to my success is believing in not just myself, believing in my community as well. Just being in the environment, being in the classroom, being with my teachers, being with my friends, I think one of the things that stands out in my mind, it's not necessarily a fond memory, but it's a memory nevertheless. And it was when I was one of five students who desegregated all-white Thames Junior High School. And that was a time in 1966 when it was 12 years after the Brown versus Board of Education decision, and school desegregation was rather new to the Hattiesburg school system. So five of us went to the school in 1966. I was in the eighth grade, and it was not easy. It was tough. Many times I was, racial slurs were directed towards me. Sometimes teachers had low expectations of me. But I knew that I had to fall back on what my teachers in elementary grades had instilled in me, and that is that sense of self-confidence, that sense of determination, that no matter what the challenge, no matter what the obstacles, you have to believe in yourself. So I think overcoming those issues, those challenges, those racially charged barriers and obstacles that were faced and that were placed in front of me, I think really made a difference, because I knew that if I can survive here in the face of sort of being in the lion's den and being dealing with all of the things that I had to put up with, that when I got out there in the real world, and it's certainly worked out that way, the challenges are still there, but I think I'm sort of equipped to deal with them now. Currently, I am a department head and professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Counseling at Prairie View A&M University. I've been in this position about 14, 15 months, and actually I was retired when I took the position, and I am so grateful and so thankful to be where we call the heel, being here at Prairie View A&M University. So much history here, and I'm just so so delighted to be a part of this, the Prairie View family. Other things that I continue to do that I'd started doing 20, 25, 30 years ago, I still mentor African-American boys in elementary school. That's a passion that I have. I've been doing it since the early 90s, and I continue to work with school kids in a number of school districts in this area. And that's a joy for me. I also have a podcast. I write books. I've published 14 books. And I just enjoy creating things. I enjoy just being in that, in doing something other than what I do for a living. I think it's important to have sort of an avocation, to have a hobby, something that brings you joy, that's not necessarily a way that you earn your living.